Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you pay, but I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I take what you pay, but I got to put you down.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I am Patrick Connor of Knuckles and Gloves, The Fight City, I don't know, a couple other places. Who gives a shit? It's fight weekend, man. That's what we're here to talk about. And here is my buddy, Bryn Jonathan Butler, author, filmmaker, trainer to the stars, right?
I'm not sure which star, but maybe one day.
Okay, well, the trainer to potential.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing real good, in fact. I think that as a boxing fan especially, I feel pretty good about 2017, man. How about you?
Oh, easily. I mean, it's the best year since I've been following boxing professionally by far. It's been so much fun, and I hate to admit it, but even the antics leading into this McGregor-Mayweather fight, like, I was laughing my head off watching some of the videos coming from there face-to-face. I mean, McGregor is so over-the-top ridiculous.
I have to admit, you know, and I'm a pretty cynical mofo, especially when it comes to this, but I have to admit, you know, watching a handful of the little kind of stuff. But I was, and I do also have to admit that Floyd Mayweather actually looked a little, I don't want to say rattled. I don't think that's really the right word, because I don't think he was rattled per se. He just looked uncomfortable. I think he looked uncomfortable not being like the most outlandish guy on that stage.
Yeah, he's not the heel. He's upstaged as a heel with McGregor. And McGregor actually seems to savor the part. I always had the sense that Mayweather didn't make a great heel, because you can feel how desperately he wants to be loved. Like, the moment anybody challenges him, say Larry Merchant, after a fight where people are booing, or after the Ortiz fight, he looks so vulnerable. You know, like, how could you question that performance, sort of thing? Whereas McGregor just honestly doesn't seem to give a flying fuck about any of it. I mean, what was the pinstripes were stitched together, fuck you or fuck off? I mean, that was inspired. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it I do have to admit, it was a sight to behold, and I thought it was going to be a lot shittier than it wound up being. But yeah, I have to admit, I was a little entertained by it.
The only thing that really put me off, and I think even McGregor caught it, so it shows you how calculating he is when you saw Mayweather, and I don't particularly know why he did this, start shadow boxing on the stage, McGregor's first off-the-cuff remark was, dance boy. I thought,
And then he immediately started saying something else, almost like he caught himself.
Son. He switched to son, because he understood, you know, It's tantamount to a slur to refer, to make that reference. Is that where you want this to go right off the cuff? I mean, right off the bat, probably not. So, yeah, and I don't know if dance son sounds particularly better than dance boy, but it was interesting to see, like, how much of it is staged, how much of it is genuine. To, like, I mean, even when Floyd Mayweather's father was laying into Connor, you're kind of like, how far does he want to go into this? Like, I mean, in terms of dredging up the background of Floyd Mayweather Sr. going after him as a drug dealer or whatever, but it was pretty playing nice, I thought, for like an opening salvo.
It didn't get too out of hand. Yeah, I mean, it just kind of It was at least on the surface mostly playful, you know, mostly fun, mostly kind of just like, you know, happy to be here type of thing. But ever since the fight was announced, and I mean to pretty much just get it out of the way, we haven't talked that much about it. We've kind of avoided it at a couple different points because it kept popping up in the press. And then when it eventually got signed, and it's kind of like you have a few choices as like a boxing fan, as a boxing journalist, you have a few choices here. You know, you can do the whole boycott thing, sure. You can just kind of silently not buy the fight and just not be interested in it, and that's cool. The whole, outlandish, I'm boycotting this, you know, fucking slamming your fist on the table thing, it doesn't really do anything unless you're somebody. I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick here, but I mean, I'm just saying, you know, like if you're some fucking guy on Twitter with like 13 followers and I mean, you know, a regular person, I'm just not trying to be an asshole here, but it doesn't really do anything to just like rant and run around tweeting everybody boycotted, hashtag boycotted this shit. It doesn't do anything. So, I mean, there are a couple of other options here, too. Do you embrace it? Do you start just covering it? Do you start live-tweeting this shit? Or do you just kind of, like, passively say, all right, well, it's coming. Might as well talk about it. Might as well discuss it and just kind of get it out of the way. That's kind of how I feel. I'm kind of like, well, I don't like it. I don't think it'll be competitive. I think that it's stupid that we're rolling out this fucking circus again. And I think that this is also very representative of the last handful of years of Floyd Mayweather's career in terms of it being kind of a metaphor for this tired, cynical, you guys will buy any of this shit promotion. And in that sense, I'm just already bored by it. But again, it's happening. It's going to happen whether I approve of it or not. So in that sense, it's kind of like, well, I guess we might as well get some discussion out. You're not among the people who thinks it'll be remotely competitive, right?
No.
Okay, I'm just making sure. I just want to make sure I'm not, having a discussion with a lunatic here.
Well, I mean, Floyd could have, an epileptic attack. Maybe he's unaware until the age of 40. It's like late-stage epilepsy. McGregor capitalizes. He could have a stroke. Any kind of medical emergency, I think, is the most likely provisional reason why he would lose this fight. For some reason, unbeknownst bone cancer leads one of his legs to collapse or something. But in terms of if all things are equal and Floyd's the best 40-year-old version of Floyd and McGregor's the best version of himself fighting his first professional boxing match, it's 10,000 to 1. I mean, as far as I can tell.
I just don't see. Yes, there are a handful of like outlandish scenarios. Floyd gets old overnight, goes in there with some freak injury that nobody knew about. You know, there's a couple of things that can happen, sure. Gets caught with some really freak punch, I guess, but it's just, if you have seen any video of Conor McGregor attempting anything remotely considered boxing, I mean, it's just, does anybody know who Charlie Zelenoff is? If you're listening,
me, I will speak for everybody and say no.
Okay. Well, Charlie Zelenoff is an internet, quote-unquote star within the boxing community, popped up a handful of years ago, basically as a dude who would go onto YouTube and talk shit into his webcam and then flail at a heavy bag. And then he wound up getting a little, internet famous for in L.A. He would go around to boxing gyms and challenge people to fight and then sucker punch the shit out of them. Anyway, long story short, he's a real dickhead. And he's kind of like an epithet now within the boxing internet world where he's considered somebody with really bad technique and wild and shitty and an awful person and everything. Anyway, not that Conor McGregor is an awful person. I meant mostly in terms of technique. There's a lot of flailing,
sure.
A lot of weird movement, a lot of like unorthodox, like, you know, look at this fucking Tai Chi that I'm doing with my hands type of shit that doesn't work in a boxing ring. And we've all seen doesn't work in a boxing ring so many times, you know, but that's kind of where we're going here. Conor McGregor is a very good mixed martial artist, but not a good boxer.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, I mean, there's some kind of parallel, and even this is grossly unfair to McGregor. Well, I mean, rather to Chuck Norris, which is where I'm leading, is watch, what is it? Not Way, I think it's Way of the Dragon, Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee. Chuck Norris was a world champion karate guy, you know, going against Bruce Lee that had no formal title. And you can actually tell as the fight begins to increase the drama of where it might go, how much Bruce Lee has to pull back in terms of his obvious supremacy of speed, technique, movement, just to make it look like maybe Norris could win this fight. And I feel like there's just something similar, just that Floyd has every conceivable advantage given the context of this fight. In the same way that, I mean, if this was a UFC fight and Floyd was fighting, I don't think it would last 30 seconds. I think
right.
He'd be on the ground, choked out, armbar, whatever. But I don't care who he has training him. If you have, you know, 6 months to try to make up for a lifetime's lack of training how to have those kind of fights where, well, not most, but many of those fights begin once you're on the ground. What training does Floyd have in that? None. And McGregor, you know, that's where he loves to be. So, it's totally preposterous, but the theater of it so far, I have to admit, like, it's much more interesting theater than boxing has had. I mean, when's the last lead up to a fight that was really fun? And McGregor is,
yeah.
I mean, like Donald Trump, I was watching every GOP debate, not because I gave a shit about any of the issues they were discussing, but because he is must-watch television. You never know what he's going to do, and the idea of, like, actually rooting for him to tear apart, like the people he was on the panel with was riveting television. He is so interesting and amusing and terrifying that there's something similar with McGregor.
Especially
I don't
now.
Know what he's going to do. Sorry, what's that?
I said especially now.
Yeah, especially now, but when you're seeing McGregor, the idea that, you know, Floyd Sr., Floyd actually seem like the good guys in this. Like, how could McGregor say this about me? It's the first time that we've seen Floyd in that position with an opponent. Floyd is never somebody that is selling tickets on the basis of rooting for him to win. Like, 90% of the people buying his fights are buying them, and they're marketed, predicated entirely on the prospect of watching him lose in a fight that you know he's not going to lose. So this is really quite interesting just in terms of emotionally, he is the one who's going to be terrorized right up until the bell rings every moment of this promotion. And, you know, it's almost like he's sort of defending boxing's honor. You heard his father saying, you know, how many fights have you lost? That sort of thing, as if McGregor is going to be really upset that he's been, you know, forced into a submission or whatever, whereas McGregor doesn't give a fuck. I mean, he's wearing fuck you pinstripes to a goddamn press conference.
I mean, on one hand, it's kind of like I would really like to believe that both of these guys are serious 100% and this is all about seeing who's the better fighter or whatever. But there's just so much money involved. There's so much money involved, and there's so much like bullshit, and there's so much press, and there's so much like dumb, you know, wrangling, and yeah, it's kind of a. I'd really like to believe it was serious, but probably the only way to get me really interested in this fight beyond just kind of being impressed by the spectacle would be if they were to turn around and in 6 months do it in an octagon. Seriously. I mean, not that that's necessarily what I want. Like, I'm not pining for something like this. But if that would be, like, the only way to really get me on board with something like this happening. if they were to turn around and in about, you know, whatever, 6 months, 9 months, something like that, they did a big tour and then they went and did it in the UFC. Like, that would be pretty crazy.
It would. I mean, again, what would it prove? Like, I don't know where to go with this in some meaningful demonstration of competition. But, I mean, it's just like these first promoters. Wrestling has been around, you know, since the days of Greece. And at some point there was a guy saying, I don't think this audience buying tickets really gives a fuck about who wins or not. I don't think they care about the athletic demonstration or that's not the drama that people are really caring about. They're caring about the stories of the two guys who are coming in here, and maybe we could start rigging this and let's see what happens. And so they rig it with like you're seeing all of this theater leading up to the competition, and they just plot it out, you know, just the same way we most people's emotional lives are lived watching TV shows and movies. They're not lived in our actual lives. It's safer to have this distance to sort of express stuff. And so, like, I just think it's interesting that where boxing is going. I mean, look, you know, I was just reading this quote by Albert Einstein with this chess book I'm doing. Einstein hated chess. He said, God doesn't play dice with the universe. And it's like the American voters totally play dice with the world by putting this guy in office. So there's just like there's some part of us that's just like, I don't know. We just love to see anything where we don't know what's going to happen next. And my guess is that like a huge faction of people watching this are just wondering if McGregor is going to just snap. And he hinted at it. Snap and just say, fuck the boxing. Like, I'm going to be the first guy to put him to sleep. And nobody really gives a shit how I do it. It's just going to be so much fun to see, like, maybe after the first round when he can't lay a glove on Floyd, he's just like, yeah, fuck it. Takes him down, chokes him out. And maybe he doesn't even care about losing all the money because he rightly recognizes, like, having a sex tape used to destroy your career and then it could make you into a Kim Kardashian. Maybe that would be the biggest publicity, like most brilliant move he could do is throw away the money from the fight and cash in off the publicity of turning it into an ear-biting episode just because everybody wants to see it happen with Floyd. That's the biggest emotional payoff that the fight could offer is not even McGregor landing a punch. It would be him like breaking the rules. I mean, it's always the ultimate WWE storyline, right? Where everything just goes completely haywire and we're all confused about what's happening. So I think there are elements to the story that could be really fun, but maybe it is just the cynical cash grab at face value that everybody else is making it out to be. I'm not sure, but I hold out hope that it could be something extraordinarily weird.
Well, let's address one more part, one more facet of this before we move on to the actual boxing going on this weekend, and perhaps touch on what happened this last weekend too. But Bryn, $100.
Oh yeah, no, it's and they'll get it. I have a feeling now it's going to break Pacquiao Mayweather. I didn't sense that at first, but I feel like people are so on board for this. So I'm surprised they didn't ask for like 120. Get more publicity for asking more than Pacquiao Mayweather. You know, it's crazy.
Oh, even the Oregonian who is known for, I'm in here in Portland for anybody who doesn't know, but the Oregonian who I can't fucking, I can't muster even like a 2-word response from any editors or anything like that about any boxing coverage at all ever. And I've tried many times. Even they're getting into the fray with some Mayweather-McGregor coverage. Shitty coverage, but coverage nonetheless. I mean, it's a lot of publications are picking it up. A lot of news sites are putting it on their front page, and it's big. So it's tough to really talk it down at this point in terms of the width of its popularity. Basically, and again, we've talked about the whole Mayweather-Pacquiao thing and how the fact that it is so big became the talking point. And again, we're kind of heading in that direction. Whatever, that's fine. That also needs to be recognized and not confused with good quality and whatnot, still, it's big. I wouldn't be surprised if it surpassed Mayweather-Pacquiao for two reasons. One, I think that we're dipping into kind of a whole nother demographic who is probably going to be willing to shell out a couple bucks to see whether or not their guy can take out this asshole in boxing over here. And I think for another reason, many people within boxing knew that Pacquiao, like Mayweather-Pacquiao, was coming way late and were kind of, you know, turned away from it for that reason, kind of jaded from it in a way, rightly so. And I think that this fight is a little bit more fresh. I'm again, I don't like it. I'm not defending it. But I think that in terms of the idea, in terms of how the promotion is going to go, and in terms of, you know, just a lot of things about how this is going to go in the next few months leading up to the fight, it's fresher. It's newer. It's something that people can dig in terms of it just being something that they haven't seen before, or, you know, at least not in this lifetime. So I wouldn't be surprised if it really did break Mayweather-Pacquiao's records.
Well, and I think that the big headline in this country, like the metric for anything's value now, is, you know, more people talk about the box office of movies than the actual movies themselves, or actors' salaries than their performances. You see it in auction houses now. Art that was worth nothing 20 years ago, you know, record-breaking sales going on and on and on. And some of the people in that game make the point to say it's no longer about the art's value or, you know, where it's going. It's about the money of the people spending it. That's the primary concern. It's the primary headline. There's no discussion about, like, is the artwork commensurate with what this guy from, you know, oligarch A, B, or C from Japan or Russia is paying for it. It's just the money, money, money. And I was listening to the 30 for 30, the ESPN 30 for 30, their first two episodes of their podcast. And I was like, the first show, what you lead in with, the whole stakes of the show are just Reebok gambling on Dave and Dan. It's a marketing gamble. Oh my God. Like, what? Talk about the most dramatic story in sports to choose from. Could Reebok rival what Nike is doing with Michael Jordan? I'm like, who would this appeal to? It appeals to an executive, because what is the only thing they care about? Money. Money is the big exciting thing. And I find that so interesting. It's the same thing with the Mayweather Pacquiao. All that was discussed was the money generated. Like, I mean, the competitiveness about it was an afterthought. And it's the same thing here. It could break records. It's $100 for a pay-per-view. Mayweather can earn LeBron James career earnings in a night, just like he did against Pacquiao. So it's just money, money, money. And so I wonder if it's just like, I guess quiz shows were where this started in the United States with that, you know, the fraud of that $64,000 question. And basically they worked out the calculus that nobody cares about some intellectual demonstration like, oh, here's the smartest guy in America. It's just watching the money go. That's what really gets people off. But it is kind of bizarre for people, you know, where you and I are concerned with boxing. Like, we like a great boxing match. We like something that's competitive. Who's going to win? I felt that juice with Kovalev and Ward. I mean, I'm scared for both guys in the sense of how's Kovalev going to lose, is going to deal with him losing. If he's overwhelmed by Andre Ward, he was undefeated in the first fight. How's Ward going to lose, deal with losing for the first time in, you know, 400 years since he was 12? Those are stakes for me that are, you know, I can easily get emotionally invested because somebody's going to be exposed with something and you don't know how they're going to deal with it. Whereas this fight, what it's advertising is no matter what it does, it's going to deliver. If it's a complete letdown, they're thrilled because they ripped off their consumers. They're really proud of that. If it's an outlandish farce, they're going to be thrilled because people are going to be talking about it. If it's a massive upset, great. So it can't fail. It just can't fail, even though from our perspective,
it's all about what's trending. It's all about how much something's getting discussed or getting advertised, or it has nothing, almost nothing to do with the quality.
Absolutely nothing. It's just, it's the same thing as Trump's narrative. It's winning. You know, if you make all that money, you're a winner. And if you're, you know, you're making piles of money, you're moral, whatever the fuck you're doing, if all indications like is that this is the most immoral, cynical cash grab, if it made money, it's not. It's really smart. It's brilliant. And I mean, look at Freddie Roach with Pacquiao. Roach, I heard for the first time ever, was saying he didn't talk to me after the fight. It's like he was disappointed. I you know, he hasn't paid me yet. So as soon as you start losing, even Freddie Roach with Pacquiao, like one of the best combinations ever, possibly according to Roach, Pacquiao's like, maybe it's Freddie's fault. You know, like, I don't know. It's just so interesting how we evaluate these things while they're like building up, and the resolution afterwards. Like we're just in such a weird place now. It does feel very new, but maybe it's not. I don't know.
You know, in a lot of ways it is, and this is, you know, for being a history guy, it's sad and it's sick and it's a sickness, but I do think about this kind of stuff a lot, just to myself, and also I wind up discussing it with Eris and stuff like that. But I do feel like, in a lot of ways, it is kind of a strange, it's not so much a dichotomy, but it's kind of a strange blend of old and new, where screwing consumers, screwing fighters, the business model in general is not new. This is boxing. This is what it's been doing forever. You know, the idea that there is a very tilted balance of power, again, not a new idea. But there are so many things about the sport now that are tied to technology and the things that are going on in our culture, in the U.S., in the American culture especially, that make this different from before. You know, it's the same, but just kind of an updated version of what we had before. It's the exact same cynicism, the exact same cruelty, just, you know, shitting on, but it's just kind of an updated version of itself. It's really strange, and it's something that's really, it's so wide culturally that it's really tough to pin down verbally in a couple sentences or something, or even in an article or even a book. You know, it's very strange how everything has developed and how everything continues to develop with, you know, particularly with this ESPN deal and that kind of, you know, tacking on to the whole PBC thing. And it's strange, man. I don't really know exactly what's going to happen in boxing over the next few years. And that's kind of a weird feeling, because I feel like in recent or in previous eras, it was a lot more predictable in terms of how things were going. And I don't really know what's going to happen.
No, I mean, once you make the shift into decadence, that's where things really get interesting. Like, I mean, like you're speaking historically, any culture,
exactly,
once they make that shift where everything is really falling apart, like the narrative that you've been brought up to subscribe to is not working. You know, the American dream, I'm working really hard. Why am I not becoming Donald Trump? Once you start questioning shit, you can go to a really dark place where you actually have to address some problems given to complete distraction. And that is going to be something that has to escalate, because you're not going to be able to get the emotional payoff, the high, to get away from what you're trying to avoid. So, I mean, like I think about it frequently with this fight, going back to Coliseum days. At a certain point, you're like, okay, I've seen enough gladiators, you know, that are fairly matched. This is getting kind of boring, like just watching these guys kill each other. Let's try, you know, Greek myths are interesting. I'm kind of like to see it, instead of hearing some Homeric tale from, you know, Billy Joe down the street, like I want to see it. So let's get some slaves to sort of play those parts. And we'll watch like Icarus be pushed off the roof and he'll have some wings on so I can show my son like what I what I've been telling him about with that story. And then this is getting boring. Let's see women kill each other in the ring. All this happened. All of this stuff happened where people who had values like us about like, oh my God, is this wrong? Should we be seeing this? Is this isn't where we came from. This isn't our proud history. But at a certain point they were like, but I'd like to see what happens next. This is compelling. I know it's kind of wrong, but it's sort of exciting or whatever. So I wonder, you know, all of this is in flux. It's never static. If the fight itself means nothing, a 10,000 to one fight can become the biggest fight ever. This is not the precedent setting. Like, you know, everybody keeps bringing up Ali fighting the wrestler in a meaningless fight for $5 million back then. Maybe like at some point we're just going to say, fuck it. Like, let's see how extreme we can go. I'm almost surprised, you know, watching like the films of like Paul Verhoeven, like RoboCop and Starship Troopers. Except that when I watched it as a kid, I thought he was pro-fascist, despite the fact that he actually grew up in Holland while the fascists had taken over his country. He was very anti-fascist, but he was warning us of where we could be headed. And now those predictions, those films look tame. They look like, in some ways, yeah, documentaries of kind of where we're at. And so I'm curious, like, you know, like fucking Schwarzenegger and The Running Man, how far are we where we're just like, fuck this boxing shit. This is boring. UFC stuff is boring. Let's just get inmates that have life sentences to just start fucking each other up to the death. Like, I don't think it's way out of the realm of possibility that in 50 years we could see like real gladiatorial stuff, because I think this stuff is just going to get boring. And I think Mayweather McGregor is a big indication that boxing, like, I think people who recognize the marketing opportunities of what this represents could say we could go further to sort of gather that real estate that is untapped. And, you know, I mean, UFC was illegal in New York until last year because of McGregor. Like, if you can keep pushing the boundary further and further, and I definitely don't think it's going to stop here, whatever happens.
Well, two things. I don't think we're all that far from watching inmates kill each other in general, because all of that shit is on all sorts of video sites, like, now. And people do it all the time. So we're really not that far from it. I don't know if we're 50 years from it at all, like fucking 50 days.
Right, right.
But I mean, oh my God. It is just, it's very strange, like I said before. And it's also, it causes me some cognitive dissonance because, so as I was learning about all of the boxing history shit and reading about it and reading ring magazines and old, you know, watching old fights that I could, as I was becoming a boxing fan, and I kind of was always sold the line and believed the line, you know, that classic eras were better. What happened back then was better. That was the real shit. The shit we got today is just some synthetic, you know, fucking offshoot. That was the real deal. And that's how it's supposed to be. And so, anyway, I'll try to keep it brief, but as I've learned, I feel like I've learned a lot of that was a lie. It wasn't better. It was the same. There was the exact same bullshit going on then. There never was an original 8 weight classes. They had junior weight classes way back in the early 20th century. They talked about cruiserweight in the 1800s. You know, like, a lot of these lines and tropes that we've been sold are not true. However, at the same time, again, this is where the cognitive dissonance comes in for me, and where how this relates to Mayweather-McGregor and Mayweather-Pacquiao and all that, is that when the crusty-ass history heads, when the old folks, when the people who have been into boxing for a long time are complaining that it's not the same as it used to be, it's not this, it's not that, again, part of me says, that's bullshit, you know, don't be so ageist. But then when I kind of look at this and we start having these discussions that we're having today, we realize, you're right. it is kind of going in a strange direction, or has gone in a strange direction, where that old model of, you know, very basic model, you become a contender by fighting other contenders, eventually get a title shot, have to defend your title, maybe move up a division or whatever the case may be. That was a very standard or typical model. That is not the case anymore. That is not something that fighters in general have to do if they have the proper promotion, the right backing. They just don't have to. That's not a thing that even exists. You can just kind of grab some random belt because they're all over the place. Don't really have to defend anything. Won't be made to do anything. You will probably be able to avoid a large chunk of fighters because of the promoter that you're with doesn't play nice with another promoter. So it's not really the same sport that it used to be. So it is a very strange, it's a strange discussion to have, because I want to argue both sides. And this is very representative of that, this Mayweather-McGregor stuff, of just kind of, I don't want to say decadence, because I don't think 100% of it is bad. There are some good things to come out of things like this. It's good that both Mayweather and McGregor, for instance, will be taking the majority of that money and not be having to give it all off to a bunch of promoters and stuff like that. But we wanted to shift that toward fighters for a long time, and kind of maybe we picked the wrong fighters to do it, or at what cost.
Yeah, I mean, what's rising to the surface? What is this economy based on? I mean, that's boxing is always useful in that way of reflecting the society that it exists in. And so it remains a perfect reflection, where it's, you know, it's still totally winner takes all. There's no union. There's no oversight. You know, it's a complete black box economically. I mean, why is Floyd Mayweather, after making $200 or $250 million, trying to delay paying his taxes? Is there some kind of financial, like, how is it possible that he's even thinking about the IRS after making that kind of money? But he is. And why did he come out of retirement when he fought Marquez? Financial reason.
And I won't get too much into it, but if we're correct, then yeah, he owes the IRS a whole shitload of millions of dollars. And that's in itself an interesting commentary of this whole situation with the money and everything. But
it's always been there. I mean, anybody who's a gambler, you know, the first thing is that they need the money to in some way engender an emotional payoff. And for it to have a payoff, you need to spend relative to what gives you the emotional payoff, which is the same thing for people that can't manage their money. They like living on the edge. Give them $100 million or give them $50,000 a year, they're going to spend commensurate with living on that emotional edge. They'll find the justification to do it. No matter how many people are there saying, you can't do this, they will do it. And so, you know, hearing the kind of money that Charles Barkley has thrown away gambling, or Michael Jordan, and keep in mind, like, most people, when they confess to something, are only confessing it to avoid bigger things that they're not confessing, to give the illusion that they're honest people. So I'm wondering about what gambling debts they haven't talked about, you know, the big losses of their career. Floyd Mayweather was never in the habit with Instagram of posting the big losses that he gambled on. But I mean, Vegas is still there, and Vegas is only there because everybody's lost the money to build what we see in Las Vegas. So anybody who's a gambler, give them, you know, if he is expecting that he's going to be able to keep generating this kind of money outside of boxing, he's crazy. He's never been marketable anywhere else remotely. So he's still doing it. I mean, he's 40 and he's still doing this. So was Tyson, by the way. When Tyson fought Kevin McBride, I believe had he won that fight, he was being offered something like a $75 million contract to fight a handful more fights. So, I mean, and Tyson hadn't really been a meaningful heavyweight in 20 years. You know? So, like, you know, if people like seeing you, you're familiar, And they're comfortable throwing money away at your meaningless fights. You could still do okay. I mean, Tyson's still doing okay. He's still making money now, telling and rehashing the same story over and over again. So it's a weird place for sure.
I'm stuck in a position where I'm about to say I don't know if Floyd Mayweather is smart enough to bank off of his personality like Mike Tyson has done recent years, which is a strange thing to say and admit, but it's the truth. I don't know where I mean, history says that this will not end well for Floyd Mayweather, especially given all this IRS bullshit. But anyway, we've been roped into the same deal where we've talked about this crap for a while now. Let's move on to actual boxing discussion. Yeah, see, we got totally pulled over our eyes about it, too. This weekend, though, there's a handful of fights on that are, in one way or another, meaningful, entertaining. I think that the first one that we have to talk about, and I think it makes sense because it's on HBO. It's on the biggest network. It's probably the most surefire entertaining fight. Miguel Burchelt, Takashi Miura, super featherweight fight. Burchelt is, I don't want to say fresh off. It was earlier this year, about 6 months ago, took out Francisco Vargas. Burchelt is an all-action fighter. Francisco Vargas was an all-action fighter. Takashi Miura is an all-action fighter. I mean, between these three, you could just kind of round robin it. I think that Francisco Vargas is kind of a little long in the tooth, despite just losing his O. Regardless, this fight is one of those fights where it's not going to be on any casual radars. It's not the type of fight that's going to get spectacular ratings, but it's probably the kind of fight that gets solid ratings on HBO because of the kind of consistent or hardcore fan base within boxing knows this is almost guaranteed to deliver.
Oh, yeah, it's a good fight on paper. I mean, I agree with you, Vargas, holding the tooth. But, I mean, he makes fun fights to watch. So I'm excited for this weekend, absolutely. And this fight's a big reason.
It's just kind of a pairing of styles where neither of them, Takashi Miura or Miguel Burchelt, are obviously particularly popular in the U.S. in terms of having any sort of structured fan base here. But among boxing fans, it seems like most of us know both of them as the type of guys who charge forward, swing really hard, put a lot of power into just about every single punch. And both of them have paid the price for doing that. Both of them can be hurt, but both of them are particularly tough at the same time. Both of them have good punching power. You know, as I've kind of, every time I'm going to be talking about a fight that's coming up, I have to do some kind of research. I feel like, you know, I don't want to be one of those dickheads that's just talking about a fight and, you know, have absolutely no idea who these guys are. Embarrasses me when I have to do that. Going back, so Miguel Burchelt has lost once, and it was by TKO in 2014, and of course it's on YouTube because everything is on YouTube. It was a fight against a guy named Luis Eduardo Flores, and exactly what happened was both of them are beating the crap out of each other in the first round, swinging hard as hell, and Burchelt walked into a left hook that put him down, and then when he got up, he was on really wobbly legs, and the ref stopped the fight. So, point is, we know he can be hurt, we know he can be caught, and that's just kind of his style, leaping forward, charging forward. It's the type of fight this weekend that is, it has to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a good, you know, kind of Western movie with, you know, two guys that whoever wins, they both make for exciting fights, whether they win or lose. And you know, it's hard not to get excited for those kind of people because most people are not that, you know? So, I mean, I agree. There's no, like, big name on the card, and it seems like there's still some, like, residual letdown from Pacquiao Horn that boxing's dealing with a little bit. But I think it's a good fight. It's interesting.
Yeah, That's another thing that we didn't really get to talk about because we didn't do a show, the whole Pacquiao Horn thing. But this whole there was a little bit of some carryover, unfortunately. But this 130-pound division is a particularly exciting division. There are a handful of fighters really toward the top. This is a legit maybe, you know, top 5 to 7 type of clash here, where both guys are in the, you know, maybe top 5 to top 7 roughly, depending on how you want to rank these guys. I don't know. But there's some potential for not just fireworks in this fight, but for this to be a meaningful fight within the division, especially because on the undercard or in the co-main event, depending on how you want to describe that shit, Jezreel Corrales takes on Robinson Castellanos. Another super featherweight fight with some kind of implication, another kind of top 10 fighter type of fight. I mean, this is again, not the type of card that's going to have casual interest, but this is good shit. Good shit by HBO.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you can't ask for more from matchmakers, you know, making competitive fights that, you know, are between guys with styles that most people want to see. So I think they're doing a good job. And you know, as you mentioned, we didn't really talk about Pacquiao Horn, but that ESPN venture did extraordinarily well in terms of the audience that it reached. And I thought there were many, many ways in which it could improve. Notably, when you start a show like that is advertised to begin at 9 o'clock, don't have Pacquiao and Horn entering the ring at like 12:15 in the morning. That was really fucking annoying to wait 3 hours and 15 minutes for these guys to get in the ring. And your undercard is basically like Uber drivers fighting guys who work at like food carts. There was no reason for that kind of shit. And Teddy Atlas and Stephen A. Smith both need immediate psychiatric attention, especially Atlas. I don't know what Stephen A. Smith has any business doing commentating on boxing beyond a Twitter following. I don't know what his credential is. I mean, I think I was talking about this with a friend of mine who's a manager in boxing, and just like, aren't there some people from the sport that can sort of move into this role? You know, like the way that we had like Gil Clancy or Ferdy Pacheco. I found it really interesting as a kid that Ferdy Pacheco was like a real fight doctor who was in Ali's corner. It added, you know, he was articulate. It was an interesting perspective. I know that he's one of the most reviled people in boxing, you know, as far as like reporters dealing with. But I loved him as an announcer. Gil Clancy was terrific, brought all that history of the fighters he worked with. Like, it's not the commentating is awful. And Teddy's always been a caricature of himself. But now he's like a caricature of an outlandish guy who needs immediate psychiatric attention. Like, it's distracting. Listening to Atlas just go off waiting for some fucking fireman analogy or whatever the hell he's going to do. But like, come on, like you're just taking advantage of somebody that's, you know, in need of serious, like electroshock therapy.
You know, I for a really long time was a defender of Teddy Atlas. And on some levels, I still kind of find him entertaining. And I think that he does have some, as a trainer, and I think that he does have some useful observations during fights that I think help especially the layperson understand exactly what's happening in the ring and how a fight develops and how this happens and the mechanics of this. And so I think that he's not like totally useless or anything like that, but the bad things and the loud things and fucking crazy things have started to really outweigh the good things. He's just, you know, he's from many different accounts, a bully to work with and kind of an a-hole. And just, I don't know why ESPN is like really latching on to Teddy Atlas. and holding on to him. I don't know why they haven't just moved on by now. The whole crew during that thing was it was a fiasco. The only thing that really wasn't a fiasco was the main event. The fight was pretty good. That's what was really lost in the all of the hullabaloo and the BS was that the fight was not that bad. It was kind of sloppy, and yes, you know, Horn used his head a lot, used his elbows a lot. Pacquiao complained a lot, you know, looked slow, looked kind of not really into the fight, but in general, I thought it was a fairly entertaining fight, and it sounded like the whole outing was a success. I just don't really know what exactly that means for the whole deal. Yeah, a strange show. I don't know where they're going to go from here. I have to say that I do have to give Horn some credit because he rose to the occasion in a lot of ways, and many people did not expect him to.
Yeah, no. I mean, I thought he fought a dirty fight, but I wasn't upset with him winning. I didn't score it with him winning. It was a bit like Ward Kovalev in the first fight. I thought Pacquiao had a couple rounds over him, but it wasn't. I mean, again, not to go back to this, but Stephen A. Smith and Teddy Atlas's mania.
Worst robbery ever. That's the worst robbery I've ever seen. It was like, oh, fuck, dude, come on.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, I was at the same fight that Teddy called, I think, with Paul Williams and Arislandi Lara. I mean, that was like a 10-2 fight for Lara, which he lost badly on all three of the scorecards. Like, that was the worst live fight I've ever been to in terms of the decision. I mean, it was just amazing. Like, reporters I was looking at, we were all just like, I mean, how can you go to this degree of looking completely corrupt? There's none of that with Horn. I mean, I thought the referee did a very bad job permitting the fight to be fought the way it was. But Pacquiao, I went back and watched because everybody's saying, oh, he's gotten old immediately. And I was like, he still looks pretty fast. I mean, he still looks like he can hit. Ninth round almost took the fight. How much has he slipped? So I went back and watched him against Hatton and De La Hoya and Cotto, and you're like, oh, it's the fact that he's always landing with those crazy shots that he's throwing against Horn. They just don't really miss. And the energy level is so different. You know, the way that he's able to fight the whole round after round after round, doesn't need to take a break. That kind of pressure really breaks the willpower of his opponents. And his accuracy with how wild he is just so phenomenal. Like, I mean, I still, like, even though I know in all rationality tells me Mayweather always would have beaten Pacquiao. The size difference, his physical tools, you know, that he doesn't take any risks. But I still kind of think that I'm looking at what Floyd was looking at back in 2008, 2009, thinking, am I sure I can contain that? Am I sure I can contain this guy who's going to throw this many punches, who's this accurate, where if there's one mistake that I make, he's going to hit me with 10 more punches that I don't see, and I'm in serious trouble. He's just such an incredible, incredible thing that we had in boxing with this guy and the challenges that he took to demonstrate it. You know, it wasn't like Tyson on the way up to Burbick fighting nobody's to look so phenomenal and then kind of slowing down when he's actually fighting top tier competition. I mean, who did Tyson look great against in terms of top tier fighters? Not many when we think about it. All those highlight reels that we watch are him fighting, you know, Joe Blow mechanic. No real meaningful victories. Okay, Michael Spinks, but, you know, a blown up, you know, Michael Spinks at 200 pounds. Looks a lot smaller than Andre Ward looks at 178 pounds. And Ward does not exactly look menacing at 178 pounds or 175 pounds, I should say. So I don't know. I definitely, when I had the point of comparison with the earlier Pacquiao stuff, granted him in his prime, it was really just immediate feeling of like, you're never going to get better than you were here with Horn. I don't buy for a second like he's not as focused on training. He's always fucking distracted. There's no way at the best of times, he couldn't be with all the stuff that he's doing or not doing that we find out later that he was doing. So I wish he would walk away. He's taken far too many beatings in close fights or being knocked out for my liking. I've always been very fond of him. I don't know, like watching him live is a very special thing. He brings a lot of happiness to people, and I do value that. On top of just how good he is, there's just something about watching that Mighty Mouse look on his face coming out to a ring, you know, when you're scared to death for him, which I was against Margarito or De La Hoya, or, you know, when he came out, I was at the Margarito fight in Dallas. I just, this guy's so big. Didn't you see what he did to Miguel Cotto, who's so much bigger than you? And Pacquiao, like, it was, you almost get emotional watching such a little guy be willing to fight that way when there's so much danger involved. And he's paid for that, the same way that Ali in the second phase of his career paid for fighting the way he did, taking the kind of punishment that he did. And, you know, these guys give us a lot, but I just thought, fuck, I mean, if Jeff Horn is doing this to you, it was very similar to Danny Williams or Kevin McBride making Mike Tyson look awful. I don't think Pacquiao looked awful, but if you can make this look like a really, you know, if you make this look like Hearns Hagler, it's time to go, man. Like, it's just what, you're too good to subject yourself to this, to subject your legacy to this. But I'm absolutely sure, and Rafe Bartholomew and I were talking about this, like, he's a lot more comfortable with the idea that Pacquiao is safe with his money. I just can't accept it. From the people I've talked to that are close to him, including Freddie Roach, who told me, what, 7 years ago, like, you know, almost in shock, just gasped, like, the guy is totally broke. And Leon Gass doing a documentary trying to do, like, his When We Were Kings for Pacquiao was just like, this guy is – he's his biggest enemy. With just the way he spends money, he's never going to be able to stop. Never, never, never is he going to be able to stop. And so I don't believe for a second that this is going to be the last one, this fight, because I don't know where else he's going to go for money. And again, I don't know what his political career is going to be without his boxing career.
He said yesterday, I think it was, I saw, I want to say it was on Boxing Scene, there was an article with the headline of, you know, him saying, I'm still going to fight for God and for my people and things of that nature. So at the very least, on the surface, there's no indication that he's going to retire.
No, he's never going to. I mean, fuck, come on. He's totally going to be our generation's Muhammad Ali. He's not going to stop until you start seeing tremors. When you start hearing him slur, when you start seeing the same stuff we saw with Ali, and then the people around him are just going to keep pushing him back there again and again and again, because where else are they going to go to earn anywhere close to the same money? They're not going to stop. Maybe Roach will, but I mean, even Roach couldn't say no with his own career. Look at him. I mean, he's a walking testament to somebody that when Eddie Futch said, it's time to stop, son, he said, go fuck yourself. So you think he's going to do it with Pacquiao? Maybe. You know, I'm sure. I mean, he's always maintained it, but all these fucking guys maintain it in principle. It always sounds good. Andre Ward is going to, you know, he's going to leave with his legacy, his health, and his money. We'll see. We'll see when he's put 5 years behind him after announcing a retirement. I'll believe it. Until then, you know, Jones said it. You know, Jones never stopped talking about it. Jones talked about retiring after the 88 Olympics. You know, still fighting, still there. Got some really exciting fight that he's child slavery or something. I heard him be interviewed. Oh, that's why you're fighting, like, some nobody in the middle of nowhere where there's, like, you know, a roll of the dice that you're going to have your head taken off because your brain has become so susceptible to getting concussed because of these horrible beatings that you've had. You know, but
all of a sudden all of a sudden, his Russian citizenship doesn't sound like such a great idea.
Right. No, I mean, it's awful. And you know, it's just part of the deal. I remember getting involved in the sport, reading some line of Hemingway's that said, like, it is always a serious mistake to become friends with a fighter. And I thought, oh, that sounds so dramatic and romantic, but it's absolutely sound advice. These guys are fucking crazy to be doing what they're doing. They are going to work every day to like direct themselves to something that almost everybody is in terror of, you know, of being involved with, like physical conflict, physical violence. And this, that's their normative environment where they feel the most safe. They are crazy. And I don't mean it in a negative way against them, but I just mean like, these are, this is a very tough place to go. And the kind of people that are driven to it, probably, you know, if you're looking for a happy ending, this isn't the best place to go.
Ain't that the truth? Well, before we give this episode a happy ending here, I'm going to rapid fire a couple things at you, if that's cool.
Like a massage parlor. Let's go.
That's right. So the other fight on that card, Joe Smith Jr., on that HBO card, Joe Smith Jr. versus Sullivan Barrera. It's a pretty solid light heavyweight matchup, needless to say, but Joe Smith Jr. has kind of been out of the fray, or, you know, just kind of out of the mix since his knockout of Bernard Hopkins last year. I mean, that's a pretty massive win considering who Bernard Hopkins is, despite the fact that he's 91 years old. And not really much has been done with Joe Smith Jr. So how does this fight go? You know, it's kind of a fight between two underachievers in a way.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Smith, welcome to New York City now, ambulance. Oh, now fire engine.
Nice. Get the cops in. Where's the trifecta?
Yeah, no, well, yeah. And my neighborhood, that's never far behind either. I like Joe Smith Jr. I like the way he fought Hopkins. I was getting sick to death with Hopkins fighting these fights. Like, I mean, I'm glad he retired him. Full respect to Hopkins, but, like, come on, you're 51 years old. Again, another guy who promised his mother he wouldn't fight past 40, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dying mother... Yeah, my dying mother, well, how much did that vow mean? You know, about as much as Jones or probably what Ward's is going to be. So, whatever. So I was glad that Joe Smith, like, finished it off and that Hopkins wasn't hurt. But, it sent the message, like, you don't belong here anymore. So, good. Go do your next thing. Like, there's tons of stuff that Hopkins can go do with the rest of his life and stay involved in boxing. Good. And he seems to have come away clear-headed. So Joe Smith, I thought, just fought a really brave, tenacious fight. Sullivan Barrera, I guess, got his payday off of Ward, which was amazingly laughable how awful that fight was. I think Joe Smith, like, could do some interesting things. Like, he reminds me of sort of like, what was his name? Joe Messi? You remember that white heavyweight from like 20 years ago with some like brain bleeding problems?
The third franchise from Buffalo.
Yeah, he was fun. I dug that guy. Like, you see him on ESPN fights.
You had the Buffalo Bills, you had the Sabres, and you had Joe Messi.
You gotta love Buffalo. I mean, I never want to go back, but it's like one of my all-time favorite cities because they're just such cool people. They really are, like, my favorite people. So, I don't know. I think that he's a heavy hitter. And he just has this real, like, blue-collar vibe that's just really, really easy to cheer for. So I'm a big fan. Gets another knockout. Like, maybe he can get a big, you know, I'd love to see him fight Andre Ward. I don't think he'd do much, but I think it'd be a hell of a fun fight to watch.
He's a guy that, you know, I do kind of wish that they were doing a little bit more with him promotionally. I don't want to say that because I don't know exactly what's being done, so I don't want to, you know, start pointing fingers. But the point is, he scored a couple of pretty big wins in a row in 2017, and he hasn't really been capitalized on. So that's unfortunate. He's obviously blue collar, both literally and in style. I think he's not super skilled, just kind of physical fighter with some good power, fairly basic, but gets the job done. And he's a very likable guy, you know, kind of a went right back to work, still working his construction job type of dude, despite, you know, just knocking out Bernard Hopkins. And that's a likable story, especially for a lot of Americans right now, I think. But I'm not really sure he has the right style to defeat Sullivan Barrera, who, despite the fact that he can be fairly tedious, is skilled. And I think that it might just be the wrong style for a not particularly skilled come forward guy like Joe Smith. I hope I'm wrong, because I'd like to see him win, but not sure.
I think you're right. I mean, I don't think much in terms of Joe Smith being like a highly skilled fighter. I like those kind of guys in sports who just work really hard, give it everything they have, and are aggressive. You know, like, he's a very assertive pressure fighter who's not going to give you less than 100%. So I always cheer for those guys, whoever they are. And he's got some real confidence, in, you know, I think from coming off the Hopkins fight. So it is disappointing. He hasn't been pushed a little more. But, I mean, realistically, where is he going to go? He might get lucky with some kind of payday. And more likely than not, he's going to get annihilated if he fights elite-level competition. But still, he'll make some money out of it. Hopefully get some money so that he can put his kids in school or whatever, which is totally fair. And I bet he would be thrilled with that kind of outcome for his career. I bet he's already really happy with what he's accomplished, but he wants to do some more. And maybe he gets his Buster Douglas moment. You know, maybe he catches one of these elite fighters where they're underprepared or a little older or whatever, and he gets a big upset. That stuff happens, and it happens to people like him, because to be lucky, you have to be close. And this is a guy who's going to do everything he possibly can to get close to that opportunity and capitalizing on it, off of it. So that's why I say, like, he just really registered with me with how he performed in that Hopkins fight, because that could have been a really boring fight if you let Hopkins turn it into what he wants to do, and he didn't do that. He took it over, and you know, geez, like, knocking him out of the ring like that, I'm glad Hopkins was okay, but it was so dramatic. So I think it's an interesting fight.
And then we also got Eubank Jr. versus Arthur Abraham on ITV. Which is, I mean, Arthur Abraham is the kind of guy, it's like, I keep thinking that he's, like, gone away or is going to go away at some point or something like that. But I'm not going to lie, I'm not following his career ultra closely. But at the up in headlines and all this shit, and I'm like, wow, what? He's still fighting? Didn't he, like, lose a little? What? But, you know, you actually bring up his record, and there are losses, yeah, but he's fairly steady, just kind of hammering away at the 168-pound division for the most part. And he's a dangerous guy, predictable, easy to outbox on a lot of levels, but big punching power in his right hand, and he's dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Big puncher, just a mean, aggressive Armenian by way of Germany. Yeah, no. He's just one of those scary guys, you know, like, he is not an easy out. But you're right, you can outbox him, and Eubank Jr. is talented. I mean, he could certainly do it, but if he makes some mistakes, if he wants to get in a slugging match, good luck.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to.
That's exactly what this is basically a test to see if Eubank can get through this, and the winner of this fight gets a spot in the World Boxing Super Series. They're doing it 168 pounds and at cruiserweight, which is fantastic. If you haven't read up on it or aren't aware of it or don't really follow European or British boxing or whatever, you need to read up on it and figure it out, because it's good shit. But the fact that the winner of this fight gets a spot in that tournament makes it, you know, kind of all the more interesting. But on the undercard, we got the Welsh Mayweather, Lee Selby. We were just talking about the real Mayweather. Anyway, just talking about the real Mayweather. I just had to bring up the Welsh Mayweather. But an interesting thing, last thing, I promise, because I know you got to jet out of here, but Omar Figueroa versus Robert Guerrero on Fox. I don't want to get too much into just saying negative things about this fight. It's probably a relatively even matched fight overall, considering where both guys are in their career and a handful of other things. But I do have to say that this being on Fox, Omar Figueroa versus Robert Guerrero was kind of a wasted opportunity.
Complete waste of opportunity. Who gives a fuck about this fight? Come on.
Okay, well, you were far more blunt about it than me, but yeah, that's pretty much what it comes down to.
I just feel like as I say with the Pacquiao Horn thing, if you're on ESPN, just like Vasily Lomachenko, all you have to do, like, I mean, Jesus, if ever there was a time that would scream out for it's on TV, put him in with fucking Rigondeaux. Let him knock Rigondeaux out in front of a big audience. It's the first time you've ever got two Olympic champions. Like, make it a meaningful fight if you're going to expose it to, like, this huge audience. Same thing with Pacquiao. Give him an old name to fight. Like, that was always when we're kids. You know, like, for layman's with boxing, like, they want a name. They want a narrative. It's the first question if I ever take somebody to a fight that's not a boxing fan is, like, who is this guy? What's his story? If they don't recognize the face or recognize the name, like, it's hard to give a shit. And ESPN, like, I feel like getting one name to fight nobody's, you know, there's very, very few guys who are able to do that in a way that resonates with an audience of just a general sports fan. So I feel like they're making a mistake with this in the way that it's been handled so far. You know, I just think that if you put together good fights with good chemistry it pisses me off because it's such a good opportunity.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. Like I said, opening up, I think it's a relatively even matched fight, given the relative, position of both guys' career right now. Omar Figueroa is coming up in weight, though, so I'm not really sure how well that's going to work out for him. But Robert Guerrero is not a massive welterweight. He's just mostly a physical welterweight. So, I think this has a lot of potential to be an ugly fight, unfortunately, too, especially given Robert Guerrero's physical, you know, pushing around, mugging shit. So, yeah, wasted opportunity. That's basically the tagline here. Create a hashtag for the fucking fight. Wasted opportunity, because this is a wide audience, and we've seen this happen on PBC with Premier Boxing Champions a number of different times where fight cards have been on Fox or they've been on NBC or CBS, particularly with Robert Guerrero, actually. He's gotten a number of, I think, different networks. I'm pretty sure that his fight with Aaron Martinez that he should have lost, where he got banged around for like 10 rounds lost and then got the decision. I think that was on Fox 2 or NBC or something like that. And it was at like 9 in the morning at StubHub Center in front of an audience of about like 13 people. I mean, yeah, this is a massive wasted opportunity, and I'm not really sure how this kind of shit gets greenlit. I'm not really sure how somebody looks at this and says, yes, this is a good idea.
No, it is strange. I mean, I have nothing against Guerrero. I respect him.
Right. It's not a personal thing.
Backstory with his wife. No,
it's
not
a bad
at all.
Decision.
But just if you're, it's a bad decision. If you're trying to showcase the fight, if your objective is to try to reach more fans and you know, use this kind of shit as a gateway drug to really get hooked. This is your
yeah.
your little. You know, like, come on. So, no, it's frustrating. I don't. And as I say, like, with what ESPN has, if they have the money to bring in, like, a really big name to, you know, to get a Pacquiao or to get a Lomachenko, why not, you know, if you're going to do that and you can only get one name and then some, like, whipping boy like the WWF used to have, you know, with just like some absolute nobody like Barry Horowitz tapping his shoulder, and it's like, well, we know what's going to happen here because it's all that happens to this guy. Like, that's not that fun. So you need to, I think, don't have a top guy and get two middle guys that are on the way up that are really exciting to showcase a fight that really excites people. I mean, why don't people get it? Like there are people out there that have this sort of Arturo Gatti mentality. It never mattered to people that supported Gatti who he was fighting, because they knew with him you're guaranteed a great fight. You're guaranteed a fight that you're going to be talking to your friends about, or are fun. You know, it's a fun fight to have showing at your house, like, while people are there who don't necessarily give a shit about boxing. I think, like, I don't know, just moving more in that direction a little more than how they're doing it right now. I just don't understand the calculus. I don't get what Robert Guerrero should not be on regular TV headlining anything.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. There was never a point in time, despite what anybody wants to sell us, there was never a point in time where Robert Guerrero was a big star in boxing. I mean, you know, a moderate star, sure. Somebody that was recognizable, yes, definitely. Fought Floyd Mayweather, okay, so what? Who gives a shit? And that's pretty much the end of it. He is not a very credible welterweight. And for that matter, neither is Omar Figueroa. So I don't really know what this fight is for. Anyway, I know you got to get going, so I just had to squeeze a couple things on in there. But I'm sure we'll be back talking about the results of these fights and previewing Adrian Broner versus Mikey Garcia at some point.
Ooh.
Another interesting venture. But nonetheless, Bryn, always fun, always a good time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And boy, Broner Garcia is just a shit kicker of a good fight. Like, that should be on ESPN, don't you think?
I would really prefer something like that to be.
Oh, I mean, that's just such a fun fight to watch. If you know them, and it's a fun fight to watch. If you don't know them, because the first thing you're going to say after it, whatever happens is, I need to know more about these guys. Who are these fucking guys? So much fun.
Wasted opportunities, man. That's the name of the game. Well, hopefully nobody wasted an opportunity to tune in today. And if you did not waste that opportunity and you did, in fact, tune in, we appreciate that. Always appreciate it. And for everybody who tunes in later on, also, thank you. If you wouldn't mind, please go on to Twitter, follow Bryn at Brynicio, Brynicio. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. And if you wouldn't mind, also, you know, take a gander at the boxing history accounts because they're fun sometimes. Go to Facebook, like the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page. Find us on iTunes. Give us a rating, please. Good thing. And, Bryn, I will talk to you later, my friend.
You got it, man. Take care, Patrick.
Take it easier, buddy.